40th chapter of the book of Genesis. Now, for the sake of those who are not here on Wednesday night, just let me very briefly now outline the fact that we went through chapter 39 on Wednesday night. And we were showing from that chapter how that Joseph was a traded slave. But when he was taken down to Egypt, he became a trusted servant in the house of Potiphar. Then he became a tempted saint. That, to me, is a very vital thing in chapter 39. In fact, I think that's the main issue in chapter 39. I was a tempted saint, but came through the temptation, finished as a triumphant soldier, ready to receive his medals. And Joseph was a true sufferer. And just before we go into chapter 40, let me ask you a few questions. Not that you'll answer them to me, but just answer them in your own soul. Regarding the temptation of Joseph as a tempted saint, what, in your opinion, was the real cause of his temptation? You see, if the devil is going to throw temptation across our path, the way he throws temptation at you may not be the way in which he brings his temptation to me. And the way he brings his temptation to me may be different from the way he brings the temptation to someone else. But the devil is very clever. Let's face that. You know how he brought the temptation to Eve. He didn't come to Adam with the temptation. He came to Eve. And I've often thought it was obvious that Adam wasn't there for some reason or other when the devil approached Eve. But what do you think was the cause of Joseph being tempted in the way he was tempted by Potiphar's wife? I'll suggest one or two things to you and see perhaps in your heart there's something else. Was it his beauty? I am convinced that Joseph was a beautiful young man. Remember, he was only a teenager, about 17 years of age when he went down. So even if he'd been working in the house a year by that time, he was just a young fellow of 18 or coming up from 19. And do you remember his mother was a beautiful woman? That was what attracted his father to her. There were two sisters. It was Leah and Rachel, and he looked at Rachel. Oh, she was beautiful. She had those dark, dancing eyes of the people of that area. He looked at the other sister. She was a little tender in the eyes, and he didn't draw to her at all. Of course, you know how he was deceived and had to take her, but Rachel was the one he loved. Rachel was a beautiful woman. And I seem to have this conviction that Joseph carried his mother's beauty. Is it possible, I suggest to you, that it was his beauty that attracted Potiphar's wife? Young fellow. With all the beauty of youth, you threw the temptation at him. See, that could often be the temptation that comes to some young folks. They may be too good looking. I was absent the day the good looks were handed out, but perhaps that's a blessing. A blessing. A lot of these good looking fellas, you know, they come down quick. It may have been something else. Was it his position and his ability? Some people may not be too good looking, but they get into a good position. He was in a good position here, although he was taken in as a slave. Very soon he was promoted, until he was in charge of all that was in the house. And if there were other servants in the house, they were under him. In fact, Potiphar, the boss man, just left everything to Joseph. He must have been a young fellow of outstanding ability. His father detected that in him years before. Potiphar soon saw it. He was a young man of ability and got into a position But remember this again, especially those who are younger now. It's all right reaching on, looking for position, looking for advantage, but some people, when they get into such a position, that's when the devil throws a temptation at them. It was with him, perhaps. You look to them and you envy the young man of his ability and the position he was in, if you wanted to lay a clutches on him. Was it simply his age? Was she getting tired of Potiphar? Was he getting too old for her? She wanted a younger fellow. Perhaps she was much younger than Potiphar. Let me tell you something. He was a man who was an outstanding preacher and an outstanding musician. He was in the employment of a certain denomination which was well known, and he moved around with that denomination, of course, from the central office, he sent them here and sent them there. But wherever he went, he created a great stir, not only with his musical past, but with his preaching. He's quite a young man. But there was an older woman with plenty of money. She determined to have him, and she got him. Many years his senior. You know the rest. He got into trouble. Became front page news, the daily newspaper. Went into oblivion. In fact, he spent a few years in prison. Then he got out. First wife, so she died. He looked around. The second time, he made a worse mistake than the first one. For this time, he was getting on in life, good age. And he took a young one. Many, many years younger than him. Trouble again. Two children. And they weren't right. You see, a lot of these things can happen when we get away from God's standards. Now, I've often wondered if Potiphar's wife was a much younger woman than Potiphar. And she looked at this young fellow, his age perhaps, and she saw the freshness of youth there. Getting tired of old Potiphar, she determined she'd have that young fellow, and she threw the temptation right across. Thanks be to God, as we saw in our last study Wednesday night, Joseph stood the test. He was strong in the Lord and in the power of his might. And he didn't dilly-dally with the temptress. He fled. You remember, he left his coat in her hand, but kept a character that was worthwhile. As we pointed out, he lost his first coat that his father gave him, when his brethren stripped him of that. Now he lost his supervisor's coat in the house of Potiphar. The sinful woman dragged it off him and used it as exhibit number one against him. He cast him to prison, and that's where we had to leave him. The end of 49, he's in prison. You see, Joseph was a man who knew what it meant to suffer. He suffered at the hands of his brethren. He suffered at the hands of his master. And now in chapter 40, Joseph, a prisoner. But you'll notice here that as a prisoner, Joseph is faithful. Now let us read the opening verses of chapter 40. It came to pass after these things that the butler of the king of Egypt and his baker had offended their lord, the king of Egypt. Pharaoh was wroth against two of his officers, against the chief of the butlers and against the chief of the bakers. They put them in ward in the house of the captain of the guard into the prison, the place where Joseph was bound. The captain of the guard charged Joseph with them. He served them, and they continued a season in ward. They dreamed a dream, both of them, each man his dream in one night. Each man according to the interpretation of his dream, the butler and the baker of the king of Egypt, which were bound in the prison. And Joseph came in unto them in the morning and looked upon them. Behold, he was sad. And he asked for his officers that were with him in the ward of his Lord's house, saying, Wherefore look ye so sadly today? They said unto him, We have dreamed a dream, and there is no interpreter of it. And Joseph said unto them, Do not interpretations belong to God? Tell me them, I pray you. The chief butler told his dream to Joseph and said to him, In my dream, behold, a vine was before me. Then the vine was 3 branches, and it was as though it budded, and the blossoms shut forth, and the clusters thereof brought forth ripe grapes. Pharaoh's cup was in my hand, and I took the grapes and pressed them into Pharaoh's cup. I gave the cup into Pharaoh's hand. And Joseph said unto him, This is the interpretation of it. The 3 branches are 3 days. Yet within 3 days shall Pharaoh lift up thine head and restore thee unto thy place, and thou shalt deliver Pharaoh's cup into his hand after the former manner, and thou wast his butler. Think on me when it is well with thee, and show kindness, I pray thee, unto me, and make mention of me unto Pharaoh, and bring me out of this house, for indeed I was stolen away out of the land of the Hebrews, and here also have I done nothing, but they should put me into the dungeon. When the chief baker saw that the interpretation was good, he said unto Joseph, I also was in my dream, and behold, I had 3 white baskets on my head. In the uppermost basket there was all manner of baked meat for Pharaoh, and the birds did eat them out of the basket upon my head. Joseph answered and said, This is the interpretation thereof in the three baskets of 3 days. Yet within 3 days shall Pharaoh lift up thy head from off thee, shall hang thee on a tree, the birds shall eat thy flesh from off thee. Came to pass the 3rd day, which was Pharaoh's birthday, that he made a feast unto all his servants, and he lifted up the head of the chief butler, of the chief baker among his servants, and he restored the chief butler unto his butlership again. He gave the cup into Pharaoh's hand, but he hanged the chief baker, as Joseph had interpreted to them. Yet did not the chief butler remember Joseph, but forgot him. That's the Lord of life, just the reading of that little chapter. Now here we find Joseph now a prisoner. And I remark to you that as a prisoner, he was faithful. Now we have marked the faithfulness of Joseph right from the start. Joseph had been faithful as a son. Now as a son, he had responsibility towards his father. And for this, he was misunderstood and maltreated by his brethren. He was faithful. He took home the daily report to his father of how his brothers were conducting themselves on their way from home, but they didn't like it. They didn't like the report. They hated him. They misunderstood him. Maltreated him. You know how they put him down in the pit and then sold him as a slave. Coming down to Egypt as a slave, we've noted in the last chapter how he was faithful as a slave. There he had responsibility towards his master. And when the temptation came, he stood for that responsibility. But because he was faithful to his master, and he said, I can't do this thing. You know that the master has left me in charge, and the only thing held back from me is you. You're his wife. So because of his faithfulness, he was misrepresented and maligned by Potiphar's wife, a slanderous, wicked woman. She misrepresented the young fellow and accused him falsely. You know that from the story. She maligned his character. That to me is a dangerous thing. Dangerous thing. In a certain town, there was a couple who were very poor. But they attended some meetings and both of them professed to trust the Lord. Up in life a little, of course, when youngsters. A good Christian gentleman there used to go along and visit their home, read the Bible to them because none of the children could read. To read the Bible to them, talk to them about things of the Lord. One day he was in the house, the man of the house was out, his work. Christian gentleman was sitting on one side of the fireplace. The lady was sitting on the other side. He had his Bible. A knock came to the door. The lady went to answer the door, and here was a woman at the door with a basket, selling things around the door. An old hawker woman. Lady of the house said, "I'm sorry, I don't need anything." Shut the door. That woman went from door to door in that place and told a dastardly tale of that man being in that house. And the neighbors believed it. That man's character was ruined because of the tale of a wicked woman. I want to go through the Proverbs and read what the Proverbs say about the slanderer. Here was a woman here who slandered Joseph, a man of God. Slandered him. Misrepresented him. Maligned his character. All because he was faithful. You know, faithfulness to God and faithfulness to our responsibilities will never exempt us from trouble. You may be faithful, yet there's trouble. Many a man has had to leave his work, give up his job, because he wanted to be faithful before God and before man. I know something for that. But Joseph was faithful even when he was in prison. I've often thought this was the most difficult one. Knowing he was in prison because he was misrepresented. Knowing he was put down in prison when he was an innocent man. Yes. When he was given responsibility, he faced up to it and he was faithful towards the captain of the prison. Now let me suggest this. Now, when he was in prison, Joseph had come down in his experience to the lowest point of humiliation. Now, it all throws back, you remember, on the two dreams that he had. In those two dreams, he had a message from God. You remember how the sheaves were to bow down to his sheaves? And his brothers understood the meaning of that. Did you think we're going to bow down to you? Earthly position. The sun and the moon, the stars are going to bow down. Joseph, do you think that father and mother and all the family is going to bow down to you? Well, whether they believed it or not, deep down in Joseph's heart was the thought, God is going to honor me. There will be a harvest time. There will be the end of it all. And in the end, I'll have that place of glory. Some water has gone under the bridge since then. He's down in Egypt now. And suppose he begins to sit down and he thinks it over. Well, they stripped me first of all of my coat. And they put me down into that pit. And then then they decided to sell me. I was brought down here shackled like a slave. I still did my best in the house of Potiphar. But as a result, I land myself here. What does it all mean? I wonder, has God left me? Now, I don't think Joseph went as far as that. For he trusted God and God was here. That is a very difficult thing, you must admit to me. It's a very difficult thing. To keep your strong confidence in God when things have come down to the lowest possible step. But Joseph learned by bitter experience that the place to glory is only reached by the way of the path of suffering. When you go through the Old Testament concerning the prophecies regarding the Lord, remember this, the prophets told of the sufferings of Christ and the glory that would follow. Christ had a glory all his own, his eternal glory was his with the Father. He says so in John 17, glorify thou me with the glory which I had with thee before the world was. That was his eternal glory. But when he was down here on earth, John was one of those that accompanied with him, and John says, we beheld his glory. The glory is of the only begotten of a Father, full of grace and truth. While Christ was here on earth, he had a moral glory that outshone all others. There wasn't one person that watched him could bring an accusation against him. Not a reasonable accusation. They brought false accusations against him, but they couldn't prove anything. God in high heaven looked down and said, he's my beloved son, whom I'm well pleased. Peter says, thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God. Even Judas the betrayer said, I have betrayed the innocent blood. Pilate the judge says, I find no fault in him. God says, he's holy, harmless, undefiled, separate from sinners. He had a moral glory that outshone him when he was here now. But he has an acquired glory, a glory he never had before, a glory he never had when he was here on earth. He has an acquired glory, the glory of redemption. But in order to have that glory of redemption, he had to go down into Gethsemane and sweat, as it were, drops of blood falling to the ground. When his soul was exceeding sorrowful, he's saying, if it be possible, let this cup pass from me. In an agony of soul. There was the sufferings on the cross. And he was left alone to languish. My God, why hast thou forsaken me? Perhaps if Joseph had known those words, he might have been saying them too, when he was down in the prison. Yes. He's going down to the very lowest ebb. I remind you of Philippians chapter 2. There in Philippians 2, you remember the steps as Christ comes down and down, lowers himself, humiliates himself. Even unto the death of a cross, he couldn't go any lower. It was the lowest form of death that a man could be put to, the death of a cross. Yes, but God has highly exalted him. You see, you go down to the lowest depth, and it's the turning point, and God has highly exalted him, given him the highest place in heaven. Here at this time, Joseph, faithful in all his ways toward God and man, yet he's down at the lowest depth. What a beautiful prefiguring, I suggest to you, of Christ, who was also despised and rejected by his own. Joseph was sold for 20 pieces of silver. The Lord was sold for 30 pieces of silver. Said it not by the Gentiles, and numbered with the transgressors. Joseph is in prison. His name would be on the register. He's numbered down there with the transgressors. But God is working behind the scenes. There comes this little episode with the butler and the baker. Pharaoh's chief men, you would say. Oh, they weren't army men, but they were very important men. It wasn't everybody that could be the butler to the king. You see, the butler's job was to go down into the wine cellar, and he had to squeeze the grapes and make the wine. Then his job was to come and present the wine cup or a goblet to the king. Now, you and I wouldn't do this today, but they tell me, some historians say, that before the king would drink of the wine that was given to him, the butler, first of all, had to take a sip. You say, why? Well, there might be some poison in it. You see, they didn't have guns to go in and shoot a man in these days, as we do now. Oh, it's true, some could take a big knife and here and plunge the knife into them. But it was an easier way to put something in the food or in the drink. So you see, the job of the butler was very important so far as the welfare of the king was concerned. And likewise, the man who was baking the bread and the dainties and doing the cooking. And for some reason or other, these men came under the eye of the king for something they'd done and they're put in prison. And there was no chance they were put in under the charge of Joseph. See how God works all things after the counsel of his own will. One morning, you'll notice that when Joseph looked at the two prisoners, he read their faces. They looked sad. And he wanted to know the cause of their sadness. It's a strange thing that. How sometimes you can read in a person's face what their feelings are. If a person is smiling, you think they're happy or something makes them smile, but when you see sorrow, see sadness, and the marks of tears coming down here, you say, what's the matter? What's wrong? What's wrong? When your little ones come in from school, you don't look at their boots first of all, you look at their face, don't you? And you could tell whether they've had a good day at school or a bad day. School I went to, you have to look at your hands. Tell whether you had a good day or a bad day. Look at their face. Something wrong. Got your report card? Yeah. Let me see it. Well, you see it after. Mm-hmm. So the girl, yeah, I got my report card. Mm-hmm. You can tell right away whether it's a good one or a poor one. It's an amazing thing. He could discern that his fellow prisoners were in trouble. Joseph was a discerning man. But he was a fearless man. He was very spiritual in his understanding of problems. He asked them the cause of their trouble. He was willing to give them the answer to the problem. You see, Joseph was watching these men. And you couldn't deceive Joseph. He was going to be the channel for delivering the message of God to these men. You know, when you look back over life, some of us can look back further road than others. You can all look back a few years. And you say to yourself, now if I had my time back, I would have made a difference here. I'd have made a difference there. I would have taken this road rather than that, and so on. But you see, you come the road, and God perhaps was leading. A new man, young fellow, with good ability, outstanding ability, with a course set before him. The day came when the depression struck, and the place where he was working closed down in the Great Depression. Few hundred people thrown idle, his whole future smashed. He was unemployed for about 3 months. The only place where he could get employment, remember there were thousands of people unemployed at that time, the only place where he could get a job was in a coal mine. Hard work. Very little pay for it. They were being paid about $10 a week. Not an hour, a week. For working down in the bowels of the earth, digging and hauling coal. He told me one day, he said, "Bill, I don't understand it. So I know what I'm capable of doing, I know what I'm willing to do. Why I've got to do this," he says, "I don't know, but," he says, "I think God has showed it to me today." I said, "What is that?" He says, "My father and I are the only two Christians in the whole section of this mine. And I think God wants to keep me there until I bear a testimony among those men." And he did. You ever thought of it? It may be that God wanted Joseph down in that prison for a little while to bear testimony to these people. God knows where he wants it, and he knows why. Provided that we're like plastic clay in his hand, he can use us no matter where we are. He can use us if we're willing to be used. And Joseph was fearless in what he said. Two men, he's got to speak to both of them. To one, he speaks a message of restoration. Shall we call it a message of salvation? He says, "In 3 days' time, you will be restored and you'll be carrying the cup into Pharaoh. You'll be his chief butler once again." The other man says, "That's wonderful. Hurry up, tell me mine." He says, "In 3 days' time, you'll have your head severed from your shoulders. You'll be hung by the neck on a tree for you, judgment and condemnation." Not easy to deliver these messages, is it? It's all right to speak of the love of God. It's all right to speak about heaven and the glories of heaven and what it'll be like to be there. And the wonderful blessings of being a Christian. That's good. But there are times when we've got to remind the congregation that our God is also a God of judgment. Our God is a God of righteousness. And the day will come when he'll judge in righteousness. Everybody's not going to be in heaven, you know. There are those that will be there by the grace of God. But the world will be in the caverns of the Lord. Joseph was faithful. To the one he declared the message of restoration, to the other he declared the message of condemnation. A fearless man, even when he was down at the very lowest ebb of his own suffering. If there was any mistake with Joseph, I suppose it comes out right here. I know there are some who condemn him for it. I'm not so sure, but I might have done the same thing, and so would you in his position. He's been kind to that man. He's told him what's going to happen in 3 days. But he says, "Well, I make one request of you. Since I've been so kind to you here, when you're back in the place where it's possible for you to speak to Pharaoh, will you remember me when it's well with thee?" Has he lost his confidence in God? Rejoice. Is he now placing his confidence in a man and asking the man to do him a favor? Some think this is just a little part where Joseph slipped. It may be and it may not be. He says, think on me, show kindness to me, make mention of me, but bring me out. You know, he had reasons for that. After all, he had been wrongfully removed from home. We know that. And he had been wrongfully accused and condemned. Is it wrong for him to make his appeal? That's the only way he could do. He couldn't go and hire a lawyer. There was no way of him appealing. Except now. And I seem to think he just acted like a man, like any of us. Wouldn't you have asked the man to remember you? But now, as a friend, Joseph is forgotten. I think I'm correct in saying this. 2 years passed from this incident before the man ever thought of Joseph again. He forgot all about him. Back in his position, not thinking now of these fellows down in the prison. For 2 years, Joseph was forgotten by the butler, whom he had befriended. I want you to think just for a moment or two, what would your thoughts have been if you had been in Joseph's shoes then? I asked that man to remember me. Day after day is passing, 2 years now. I've never had a word from him. He must have had opportunity in 2 years to speak to Pharaoh about me and bring my case before him. For 2 years he's waiting. Two of the hardest years in all his training. I want to say this to my own heart as well as to you. God sometimes makes us wait. And waiting time is not wasted time when we're waiting on God. Now sometimes we're like horses. If we didn't have the bit in our mouth and the reins holding us back, we would get off in a stampede. Make mistakes. Sometimes we're like mules. When it's time to go, we get our heels dug in and we won't move. But the Bible says we should be neither like a horse nor the mule. Joseph had to wait. Waiting time can be trying time. You wait. But if we're waiting on God, it is not yet time. Our time's gone, but let me say this in closing. On the last night that the Lord was with his disciples in the upper room, he made a request of them. He showed them, first of all, how it was to be done. Then he requested them to do this for a remembrance of him. We're reminded of it in 1 Corinthians chapter 11, as often as we do it. We do show his death till he comes. Why was it that the church began to neglect that request? They did it to begin with, then they neglected it. They cut it down to once a month, once a quarter, some cut it down to once every 6 months, some cut it down to once a year, and some cut it out altogether and said it's a non-essential. Is anything a non-essential when the Lord requests it? Now, don't blame the butler for forgetting Joseph. If we are prepared to shut our eyes and shut our ears to what the Lord requires, let's pray. Father, we bow our hearts in thy holy presence. We thank thee for thy kindness to us this day. Thou hast supplied us with all that we need. We look back over the week that's gone, we give thee thanks. But now we look to that which lies before us. And we pray that the spiritual strength received today through having fellowship with those of a kindred spirit may help us as we go into a new week. We think again of those who have faced difficulties day by day, some in the home, some at school, some at their work, whatever it may be, that their responsibilities and their difficulties. Oh God, help each one that, like Joseph, they may be faithful and they may be fearless as they bear the testimony. Take each of us home now in safety, and we think of all those tonight who are sick and weary.